NATO's 20-year mission in Afghanistan is all but over. But Taliban attacks continue, and there is growing concern about the country's future. In April, President Biden said he's ending the U.S. role in the war, but not its commitment.
Our troops are coming home, but we agreed that our diplomatic, economic, and humanitarian commitment to the Afghan people and our support for the Afghan National Defense and Security Forces will endure.
We've had a number of conversations about Afghanistan since Biden announced in April that he was ending the war, and we want to continue today with James Stavridis. He's a retired U.S. Naval Admiral and former NATO Supreme Allied Commander. In that role, he commanded the NATO mission in Afghanistan from 2009 to 2013. Admiral Stavridis, welcome back to the program.
Great to be on with you, Jane.
As you watch this American withdrawal from Afghanistan, I'm curious what is going through your mind.
Well, first of all, when I commanded that mission, and as you know, it's a NATO mission, we had 150,000 coalition troops there. We're now down to somewhere around a few thousand. So the vast majority of these troops came home a long time ago. I do believe that as we end the military involvement here, it's going to be crucial, as President Biden said, that we continue our efforts in security assistance in terms of funding the Afghan security forces, in terms of the diplomatic, economic development. All of that are going to be very important if we're going to avoid what we all want to avoid, which is Vietnam circa 1975, like helicopters lifting off the roof of the embassy. We can still avoid that. It's going to be challenging.
Well, there are many, as you well know, who say that Afghanistan will or could collapse into a terrible scenario, chaos or worse, civil war after the U.S. troops leave. The Taliban is clearly surging across the country at this moment, taking control of territory. I want to play this clip from ABC's Martha Raddatz speaking with the commander of the U.S.-led mission in Afghanistan, General Scott Miller. Take a listen.
I've talked to a lot of Afghans. They're very concerned that the Taliban will move into Kabul. How likely is that?
If you go back to what the Taliban's objectives are, they want to take over. You know, that implies that at some point they are in Kabul.
So, Admiral, if the Taliban were to take over Kabul, wouldn't Afghanistan be right back where it was before the U.S.-led invasion in 2001?
Unfortunately, in many ways, I think it would. And that would be a tragedy, in my view, when you look at all the progress we have made in human rights, women's rights, education for girls, life expectancy, medical accessibility, a global engagement for Afghanistan, a democracy, although not a perfect democracy. There's been enormous progress, and I think that is highly at risk if the Taliban sweep back in. I think there's still a 1 in 3 chance that if we continue to engage, we provide the funding for the Afghan security forces, we exercise the kind of diplomatic influence, we keep the airports open. I think there's a 1 in 3 chance that they could be held off, and we end up with what we want, which is a settlement between the Taliban and the government of Afghanistan that preserves the gains we've made. Still a chance for that.
Hmm. Well, from a national security perspective, the big concern that you hear often is that an Afghanistan controlled by the Taliban again could become a place where another terrorist attack against the U.S. is planned. It sounds like, I mean, you share that view possibly. I mean, it just depends on what happens.
Indeed, it does. And here, the Biden administration is working hard, and I know this through my contacts in the Pentagon, to come up with a credible over-the-horizon strategy that if the Taliban were foolish enough, let's hypothesize that they come into power, if they were foolish enough to allow a resurgence in al-Qaeda, to allow an Islamic State to take root, we would have credible military options to come in and accomplish what has been our fundamental objective here, which is to prevent attacks on the homeland. And I'll close, Jane, by saying people often say to me, as a veteran of the Afghan wars, you know, aren't you feeling as though you failed in your mission? And I say, no. For 20 years, there's been no attack on the United States that came out of a previously ungoverned Afghanistan. I did my mission. I hope that going forward, we can still say that. And if we're going to pull the troops out, that we have an over-the-horizon capability to counter it.
Admiral, let me move on with you to some other topics. President Biden is pushing for the United States to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal. To your mind, is this a good idea?
I don't think so at this point. What President Biden said on the campaign trail, with which I agree, is that it would be a longer and stronger deal. That I would agree with. If we could extend the time frame, if we could strengthen it to include anti-ballistic missile sanctions, if we could constrain Iranian bad behavior around the region, if the deal could be longer and stronger, then yes, I would support it. But simply going back to the 2015 deal, to me, does not solve the problem of preventing the Iranians from marching onward toward culminating with the nuclear weapons.
And so what about the recent airstrikes that targeted Iranian militia groups in Iraq and Syria? Were they justified? Were they necessary?
They were 100% justified because there were attacks coming from those bases against U.S. troops in Iraq. Many listeners may not have focused on the fact that we still have several thousand U.S. troops in Iraq, quite importantly, supporting the Iraqi security forces as they combat the remnants of the Islamic State. The Iranians who support these militias were launching UAV attacks against some of our troop concentrations. This was a very justifiable act of self-defense. I support those strikes.
As we've mentioned, you are also a former NATO Supreme Allied Commander. We recently spoke with a military analyst, Andrew Basevich. He made the case that NATO today is obsolete. And I want to play a clip from that interview, and then I want to get your response.
The continent may have certain problems. We all have problems. But it's stable. It's democratic. It's prosperous. Its adversary is no longer the Soviet Union. It's now Russia, which, if I'm not mistaken, has a GDP equivalent of Italy's. So Europe is perfectly capable of managing, providing for its own security.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably don't agree with that. Admiral, your thoughts?
I don't. I know Dr. Colonel Andy well, and we've had many conversations over the years. I think NATO has an ongoing purpose, and to confine the purpose of NATO to defeating the Soviet Union kind of misses the larger point. History doesn't end, despite Francis Fukuyama's books alleging that. History has marched on. And so the U.S. ought to be cultivating our allies, partners, and friends in Europe because there are still problems in that region coming from Syria, which is on a NATO border, coming across the Mediterranean, in the Arctic, in cyber. There are still many challenges out there. And having good, strong allies is something we should treasure. The Europeans could spend more on defense. They can certainly afford it. I would encourage them to do so. I did so as Supreme Allied Commander. That is an important part of it, but I wouldn't get rid of NATO. I think it's still a force for good in the world.
How serious and significant is Russia as a threat to U.S. national security today?
Well, let's observe that if Vladimir Putin woke up on Tuesday and decided to end the world by launching a nuclear strike, he could. He's got thousands of nuclear weapons. So by definition, they are a significant threat when they discuss aggressive military activities. Secondly, we watch Vladimir Putin invade Ukraine, annex Crimea, support a war criminal in Syria, conduct cyber attacks against U.S. corporations, and worst of all, attempt to intrude in our democratic elections. So, yeah, I think Russia's a quite significant challenge, although they don't have a massive GDP. They have nuclear weapons. They have ambition. They have a professional military. And I think they're going to continue to play the role of kind of a spoiler in international relations going forward.
Let me move to China for a moment. You recently co-authored a novel with Elliot Ackerman. It's called 2034, a novel of the next world war. And you imagine a naval clash between the United States and China in the South China Sea that year. As I've read part of it, I'm curious, how far from fiction is that scenario?
Well, it hit number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list, and my response when people congratulate me is, let's hope it stays on the fiction side of the list.
Yes,
I would say it is a possibility that if we are not mindful of the concern of a miscalculation, we could stumble into a war. People have said to me, oh, you've written another Cold War kind of cautionary tale. Not exactly. This is more pre-World War I. Intertwined economies, royal families related by blood and marriage, yet the nations of Europe stumbled into, sleepwalked into a conflagration that ultimately killed 80 million people when you count World War I and World War II. Could that happen with the U.S. and China? Unfortunately. That's why I've written the book, not, let us hope, as predictive fiction, but as cautionary fiction.
Retired Admiral and former NATO Supreme Allied Commander James Stavridis. Admiral, thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure to be on, Jane. Thank you.